All right, along with Tony Smith and Jeff Logman, Mike Dempsey here with you. It's Jaguars Today. I checked the tape Tuesday, Logs, with the fresh haircut. When you get that this morning?
It no,
looks
last
that
week.
Fresh.
Got it last week.
Man, you must have really got it cut short.
I did. I got it last week on Thursday.
Wow.
Had to.
I'll get mine cut tomorrow. I do every Wednesday, no matter what.
You're looking a little long.
Yeah, it is. It's getting a little raggedy right now.
Looking a little long.
Yeah, 6 days in, brother. You got to get that thing cut back down. All right, Logs. So the hunting trip did not bring you a bounty of...
No, but it brought me a bounty of mental therapy.
Yeah.
I can tell you that.
Yeah, no shot Franchi is going to join you out there in the...
No. I invited him, and Frank said, do I have to wear a hat? And I said, well, yeah, you probably got to wear a hat. And he said, well, that would mess up my hair.
Exactly.
And I said, well, then I guess you can't go.
That's the number one reason you knew he wasn't going to make that trip. All right, the Jags were hunting for the third victory against Kansas City. Overall, you know, if you're going to grade this performance, we can break down, we will, the specifics of it. Maybe not a letter grade, but just were you, when you compare to where they were, it was better than the week before, but it's still obviously not good enough because they didn't win the game. But
That's just right. Just
in terms of bouncing back off of an ugly, ugly game, how did you think they did?
I thought they did very well. And, you know, there's two ways to look at it. Okay, let's look at it. Okay, they're 2-5 going to Kansas City. How are they going to play? Well, they didn't win. Well, wasn't very good performance. Well, yeah. But you know what? If this team, just ignore a 2-5 record going into Kansas City for the Jaguars, and consider the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs are a pretty good football team. And I thought the Jaguars played very well in certain areas. I mean, obviously it wasn't great in all areas. I thought the defensive performance was fantastic. And I think it was even more impressive considering what had happened the prior weeks because, you know, we saw a defense get the wind taken out of their sails, so to speak, at Tennessee, where I don't want to say they quit because I didn't see any signs of quit, but it almost had the appearances of being quit because you know, you're down 27-0 at the halftime. And then the week before against Oakland, you had personal foul penalty, signs of frustration. And, you know, when you have an offense that's struggling and a defense that had been playing well up to the Oakland game, it's hard to continue to have energy and drive when you're not getting rewarded from the other side of the ball. And so I thought the defense did a fantastic job of putting blinders on and saying, look, let's control what we can control and just play football. And even though the offense, special teams, et cetera, allowed some very unfortunate field position situations, the defense responded. I mean, essentially five giveaways, if you count that long punt return as a giveaway. And those five giveaways, with the exception of Irie, so four of them were in plus territory. They were on the other side of the 50 on the Jaguar side of the field, and the defense only allows 13 points. I mean, wow, that's really good. The only thing they didn't do on defense, once again, was take the ball away.
Right.
You know, and then offensively, you rushed the ball for 205 yards. You didn't get enough points. So from that, you know, improvement, yes, because you ran the football. You took the pressure off of a quarterback who's struggling, and the quarterback still appeared to struggle. Even though, you know, he only had one interception. He threw two touchdown passes. I mean, it could have been three interceptions. I mean, you got to be real. I mean, the one that he threw to Parker, the safety,
at
right
the
there at the goal line. Oh, my God.
Terrible.
I mean, what? And even the one to the linebacker. Ramique Wilson.
Right in front of him.
He's right there.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing? And then the other one, which was supposed to be an out and up to Allen Hurns, where Steven Nelson got his hands on it, okay, diving attempt, but really not like, you know, a chance, right? He had a chance. Bad decision, bad throw. You know, so there could have been three interceptions in that ball game. But, you know, on the flip side of that, with Blake's performance, you saw some things that you hadn't seen. Hitting people in stride to where they can get yards after catch. The throw to Mercedes. The one early to Julius Thomas in stride.
The one early to Allen Hurns.
The one to Allen Hurns.
Down fourth down.
The one to Marquise Lee, where he hits him in stride, literally going towards the left end zone from the camera perspective and the fan perspective watching on television. The one to T.J. Yeldon, the touchdown pass, hits him in stride where he literally catches the ball and he's running. And then he has the ability to get up the field and then instead of having two defenders – with a chance to make a tackle, it becomes one because it was a good throw, and he cuts back inside and he scores. I mean, so, you know, it's kind of a conflicted game. And you don't win, you turn the ball over. Those are all bad things. But the good things are the defense held them 13 points, four giveaways essentially. And then offensively, he ran the ball for over 200 yards in the first game with a new offensive coordinator. And it showed signs of life on the offense. So kind of a conflicted game on how to look at it. And when I watch the game, you're disappointed because the result's not there. But then when you go back and you watch the film and you see some of the individual plays of improvement, you're like, okay, that's better. That's progress. So, you know, it's how do you look at it? You know, in the end, it's a loss.
Right.
You know, you're not going to remember over 200 yards.
Right, rushing. And that's the thing, too. You know, I think some people hear us and say, and we try to look for the improvement and the positives. It doesn't mean you as a fan have to be satisfied with that.
No.
That's not, you know, that it's they're 2-6. If you're unsatisfied, it's understandable, you know. But we do try to find, you know, we can't just sit here for 2 hours and go, well, they lost again. What's that? You know,
it takes two seconds to make that announcement.
Exactly. So yeah. you break it down and you try to figure out where they are improving and where they are backsliding a little bit and where they're going to head this week against Houston. So we'll dissect this game with Jeff Logman here on a Check the Tape Tuesday and also look a little bit ahead to the matchup with the Texans coming up on Sunday back here at EverBank. If you'd like to get in today, number of ways to do it. The question of the day, by the way, there's two of them. It's not really a question, but you can always submit your social media questions for Jeff Logman today on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Logs56, LOGS56, and on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. The text line driven by Duval Ford at 641-1010, or you can just call the same number. So you can submit those questions as you do every Tuesday. But also, we got a fun question out there. Tyler came up with this one, and it is this for today on Jaguars Today. Which current or former Jaguar would get your vote for president of the United States if you're casting a ballot in that direction? So you can have a little fun with that if you want to.
Can I go future with Zach Cunningham?
He's
got my vote, baby.
Calm down, all right? He can maybe be on the undercard or something
They're
like
that.
They're
not drafting that kid.
Who's Secretary of the Interior.
It's the linebacker for Vanderbilt.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, he's
going to be a first-round pick.
That's
what I got. I got a four-win team that has a first-round linebacker on it.
Right
on.
Right on. All right, so get on all that today if you want to, and phone lines will be open to you when we come back. We'll check the tape through Logman's eyes today on a Tuesday here live at EverBank on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Play fake. Foles drops the throw, gets away from Rush, fires it deep down the field. There's nobody there but defenders, and Prince Amukamara was going to pick it off, and he ran into Tashawn Gibson. Prince Amukamara looked like he was going to intercept it inside his own 10-yard line, but he collided with his own free safety, and it's incomplete.
I remember in college, we'd say Oski, and that told the other guy to bail out because I got an interception. You know, there's, you know, back to those, I mean... You know, I don't know if we have to have that or they should communicate, but it was for that reason, you know, to let somebody know that they have it. I think Gibson was going and he was tracking it, and then at the last second he saw Prince there and would try to pull up, and they just got too close.
Is that just bad luck, Logs, or does Gibson need to be more aware in that situation?
No, I mean, that happens, you know. I mean, he's not paying attention to where Prince Amukamara is. He's looking at the ball, and it's unfortunate, but... that's the way it goes sometimes. And can you yell Oski while you're running down the field at 100 miles an hour and the guy actually hear it?
I think he's saying maybe Amukamara being in position to see maybe what's coming out. I don't know. But
two guys running down the field with their eyes on the ball.
How about I got it? I got it. Mine.
See, no. But if it's something that's not like, generic, then the receiver could do that to try to confuse you.
Sure. If they know what the yeah. word of the day is.
That's why Oski works. Right?
Oski. I've never heard of that.
You hear that, no, Oski?
Must
it's
be
like
a Minnesota thing.
A trigger in your head, like Pavlov's dog.
It did sound
stopped.
Like Upper Midwest,
yeah.
didn't it?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Totally.
Did. Oski. All right. Let's get to some phone calls here at 641-1010 as we kick off another Check the Tape Tuesday with Jeff Logman, Mike Dempsey, and Fat Tony here with you at EverBank Field. Let's begin the morning with Chase in Orange Park. Good morning, Chase. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You got it.
Well, a couple different things. Of course, talk on the game and a couple of things that I did see, but also wanted to answer your question in regards to who would I vote for president. Are we doing past and present? Or?
Past and present. Anyone? Jaguar organization, by the way. Doesn't have to be a player, coach, whatever you want.
Kevin Hardy.
Kevin Hart, how come?
To me, it was just straight to the point. I mean, you knew what you were going to get from him. And that's something that I would say in this election, you don't know what you're going to get, in all honesty. So
I'll say this about Kevin.
He was straight to the point.
Chase, I don't know about political parties, but Kevin Hardy was renowned for throwing some other parties back in the day.
That's why I'm sitting there going, Kevin Hardy?
We can all get
really?
On board with
yeah.
that one, Chase. I'm with you, Chase.
You mean the one who had a petition going on in Queens Harbor to get him to stop having late night affairs?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the democratic process at work right there, Logs. Chase, what are your observations from the game this weekend?
A couple of different things. Blake's indecisiveness. I mean, he's worse than me trying to choose hot wings or ribs. And I mean, when it comes to making a decision on which way he's going to go with the ball or what he's going to do, I did appreciate the couple of pull downs and scrambles that he did do instead of trying to force something to happen. And then the fact of Jeremy Parnell, I mean, he was totally washed this weekend. He looked totally washed up, and I can almost understand the preseason or even the training camp fight that took place between him and Fowler, if Fowler made him look the same way that he looked on game film this weekend.
Yeah, well, it wasn't really Fowler or Parnell. It was more Fowler, Luke Jokel at times. But, I mean, look, that's a tough matchup. And I knew it was going to be a tough matchup for him going into this ball game, because Jeremy Parnell, very long, change of direction, is not great. And D Ford, that's the strength of his pass rush, his change of direction. And he's an excellent hot player. You know, 3.5 sacks the week before against
right.
Indianapolis. So, I mean, you knew it was going to be a tough matchup.
How has Parnell played this year overall in your
estimation? I think overall he's played pretty well.
Yeah?
His pass protection has improved from last year, I think, which is the most noticeable thing to me. His run blocking, his target points need improvement, but I think overall he's taken a step up from last year. You know, even though we're talking about a player who has been in the National Football League in his seventh year, he really is still relatively young when it comes to playing time. Because,
right, he didn't play a lot. He was a backup in Dallas. Well,
he was a backup,
primarily.
But he was a defensive lineman.
Right. Well, at one point, sure.
Yeah, and he makes the switch to play offensive line. So, look, he's not a player that you sit there and you go, okay, he's the problem. You know, but he's a player that you go, okay, in certain situations, maybe we need to give him a little bit of help.
What about Blake's indecisiveness there? Are you seeing that? Is that something that stood
out?
Well,
we've been seeing that, you know, all year. And he doesn't make quick snap decisions where the great quarterbacks, you know. And there's only a few of them. You know, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, those types. Ben Roethlisberger, Brady being probably the best example, when he takes the ball, when the ball touches his hands, he's already eliminated two options because he knows what the coverage is and he knows what's not going to work and he knows where to move his eyes to make a decision. That's not Blake's strength right now, and nor has it ever been, but that's something that takes time. I mean, even though he's in year three, you know, what is it, 38 starts that he's got under his belt, Tom Brady's got, you know, hundreds, you know, so... but it has to get better, and I think they did a good job with him in the ball game, and I think Nathaniel Hackett did a really good job with him in the ball game of limiting what he has to see to make a decision on. The half rollouts were good. The play actions to where, you know, he's got an opportunity to focus in on one area, but he did miss some things. He had, I believe it was Allen Hurns one time down the field that would have been a big play, and he didn't even see it. He had another play where he had the Chicago hero, Aurelius Ben, going down the field, and he's got a little bit of pressure, and then all of a sudden his eyes leave downfield, which, you know, I think the Blake Bortles in the past last year would slide, his eyes still never drop, and he's looking down the field, he might see that and throw it up. So, it's not anything that's a secret that Blake right now is struggling with some of his reads.
Yeah, we saw a couple of the bucket throws that we've talked about with him before show up in that game this weekend, which I think is good. because it felt like even those were kind of dropping out of his game. But you mentioned the idea of seeing it before the snap and knowing where the play should go, and that's something we talked about a lot this offseason as to that's where you really want to see the growth from Blake Bortles, and we're halfway through the season, and it doesn't feel like he's taking a step forward in that direction at all.
No, and that's a concern, you know, because, you know, going forward, you know, this year, next year, you know, looking down the road, you know, if you're building, trying to build something to last, you have to be settled at the quarterback position, and you have to know that, okay, we're seeing it, the progression is happening, we're confident, he's our guy. You know, and I think this year the performance that you're seeing out of Blake is going to make you question whether you've gotten that or not. You know, last year at the end of the year, you're like, we feel like we got a guy, you know. If he continues to make steps, and this year, I don't think we're not seeing a step. There's no thinking about it. You really haven't seen the steps
at
taking.
All. Right.
You know, and that's a concern. That's a big time concern.
That's a major concern.
Sure.
And that's supposed to be the franchise centerpiece right there. A couple of things here on the text line driven by Duval Ford in relation to Oski. Here's one from the 407 that said, we used Oski in the late 70s at Orange Park High School. It was from 74 to 77. And another one who said that they would yell Oski after the interception so the other team knew to block for you. So your players on your team knew to block for you on the return. So apparently it was more a widespread thing than we realized with the whole Oski thing. Here's one that this baffles me. I guess it doesn't, but anyway, let me read it. It says, hey, how can Log say that the Jags D played well? It's against backup quarterback, backup running back, no number one wide receiver, and the number one tight end played half the game. He played more than half, but regardless, not going to nitpick the details. Whether they're playing against, I mean,
because they did,
they played good defense, right? it was against a lot of backups for Kansas City, but how many teams this season in the NFL have been held at 231 yards or less? I would think very few. In any game this year, I think they played outstanding defense. When you're 1-for-14 trying to convert third downs in your Kansas City, that's pretty good defense. And I thought one key in this game, Logs, and I'll let you address that certainly, but one key, it seemed to me like Todd Wash really made it a point to dial up some pressure on third downs, and Nick Foles did not handle it.
Yeah, he's
well.
Not a very mobile guy.
Right.
You know, and I think that was a really good decision, a good game plan. You know, look, I think that's, you know, how can you say that the defense had a good performance? That question itself right there comes from now the team is 2-6, you know, and it's not about performance. It's about at the end of the game, what's the scoreboard say? I understand that. But reality is, like I said, if you ignore everything about that game and you focus in on the defense itself and you ignore the record, you know, look, when you allow 231 yards, I don't care if they're missing Macklin and they don't have, you know, a quarterback and Alex Smith. I mean, Nick Foles has started a lot of games in the league. You know, yeah, they are on a backup running back, and Kelsey did get himself thrown out. It's not like he's a game-breaking wide receiver. He's a heck of a tight end. You know, but 0-for-3 in the red zone, 1-of-14 on third down, 231 yards, and it's on the road. And it was a situation where you're talking about the field position was not good, you know. So, if you can't see a good performance in that, I don't know what to tell you.
Or you just choose not to. I mean, yeah. There are say because here's another one. It says I cannot say I'm impressed with the defense because we're not playing against Alex Smith and other players were. Hang on, this thing just jumped. And other players were not there playing for the Kansas City Chiefs. Stop glorifying a bad team in all caps. We lost. No one's glorifying any. I mean, again, if it really offends you to tune in and hear us talk about the details of the game, win or lose, don't tune in because we're going to do it every day. That's what we do on this program. And what do you think we're going to do?
I always like it.
Man, they're 2-6.
I always like it.
What are you doing this weekend?
When we lost is in all caps. Like, we don't understand that.
We know they lost the game. That doesn't mean there were not aspects of the game that were good at the same time. I think it's pretty clear we're pointing out the aspects that were not good.
I appreciate that reminder that they lost.
Yes, they did. They did lose. But even in defeat, there can be positives for your team. We're not saying you should feel good about the overall status of where things stand at 2-6. Nobody's saying that, but we're going to also point out.
At the end of the day, it's about wins and losses.
Right. But in the meantime, there's a lot of details, and that's
sure.
I did a quick check,
by the way. The total yardage for the Chiefs in the game, 231. There's been 13 other games this year where someone held an opponent to less than 231 yards. Only one of those games resulted in a victory for the team being held down. That was the, not surprisingly, the Minnesota Vikings when they beat Houston earlier.
Let me guess,
they
scored on defense in that game.
They probably did.
Right, might have scored a couple of times on defense this year.
That was a game they scored.
So one out of, what was it, 12, did you say, Tony?
13.
13.
And this would be 14.
All
so
right,
it's
so two out of 14,
12, yeah.
Basically, right. So every seven times someone is held down that far, they win one of those. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's a pretty good performance right there.
Yeah, that's good.
Defense. Again, the 1-for-14 on third down is amazing.
That's incredible. And that's a great job. I mean, I don't care who you're playing. I don't care who's in the lineup, whether you got backups or not or whatever. You know, that's a outstanding performance on the road.
Yeah, let's keep in mind, Alex Smith came into that game with 8 touchdowns. I know he didn't play. I'm just saying, it's not like he's had this prolific passing offense that he's been orchestrating.
And the debate in Kansas City the whole week leading up to the Jaguars game was, could this game be the next Colin Kaepernick moment for Alex Smith? Because the Kansas City fans and writers saw what Nick Foles did the week before against the Colts, and he was really good.
He was, but that to me was a little bit of fool's goal. I mean, I think Alex Smith is clearly the better quarterback at this stage of their careers than Nick Foles because he is a guy who protects the football. I know Foles hasn't turned it over either, but it's a very small sample for this year. I just think Alex Smith, for what they choose to do with that offense, is a pretty efficient guy. The record speaks for itself, but regardless, thanks for the text. Keep them coming.
Sure.
No matter what your opinion is out there at 641-1010, we'll take a timeout. We are going to hear a little bit from Gus Bradley as he addressed the media yesterday. We'll take more of your calls, social media hits, what have you, and get a lot of votes for a lot of different folks right now on who you would vote for, past or present Jaguar player, coach, front office, owner, whatever the case may be, for president of the United States. If you have the choice, you can do that today as well. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jaguars, after entering Sunday, ranked 30th in the NFL in rushing, rushed for a season-high 205 yards on 32 carries in a 19-14 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday. Head coach Gus Bradley on Monday credited new offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett's emphasis on the run for the improvement. Now on to the injury update. Wide receiver Brian Walters and wide receiver Allen Hurns will begin this week in the NFL's concussion protocol. Linebacker Miles Jack also sustained a hip flexor strain, and Bortles received stitches for chin laceration after the game and will not appear on the injury report this week. This has been Jags Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today. Visit 1010XL.com today and enter the Sticky Fingers Ultimate Tailgate.
Come join the fun.
Win great-tasting barbecue from Sticky Fingers and cool swag from Bud Light to kickstart your next tailgate.
Let's do this!
Go to 1010XL.com now. Jacksonville was built on specialists.
We be special!
Now the Special Teams Player of the Week, brought to you by Air Source America Heating and Air Specialists. Who's your Air Source on 1010XL?
Jaguars wide receiver Marquise Lee is the Air Source America Special Teams Player of the Game. Lee returned 3 kickoffs for 87 yards, including a 45-yarder to set up the offense in great field position. Congratulations to Marquise Lee, this week's Air Source America Special Teams Player of the Game.
Lays down the law. Jeff Lagerman Tuesday on Jaguars Today is brought to you by Crockett Law PL Real Estate Law. Now more with Jeff Lagerman.
I thought the defense may play the best game, you know, overall, just because of third down, the sudden change opportunities, stopping the run, you know, that they played very well and kept us in the game to where we had chances at the end.
That's Gus Bradley talking about the performance of his defense yesterday. That was Gus talking yesterday, the performance on Sunday, of course. Jeff, more on that?
Yeah, I thought the thing that really impressed me the most, you know, when we first started talking about the defensive performance, we talked about how to be able to sustain energy in a game after two consecutive weeks where you didn't, when the offense really wasn't giving you a lot of energy and reward. And I thought that, you know, there was at one point in the game, there was a great opportunity for the defense to have that happen. And it was the Chris Ivory fumble in the end zone. I say in the end zone because I think he was in. But there was no clear evidence. They made the right call.
You agree with that on the replay? There was no way they could have turned that?
I do.
Yeah.
And if the call was the other way to where then and Andy Reid challenges if the call on the field was touchdown, they would not have been able to overturn it. So unfortunate, you know, that when you have Solomon Wilcots as your analyst, you know, he's probably number six or seven in the rankings with CBS. And when you have – you know, six or seven crew or five crew, whatever it is, with the network, the number of television cameras that travel with a crew like that are not as high.
I heard Gus yesterday said something to the effect that they saw an angle. He saw an angle that he said that the refs did not have access to or he didn't think they had access
to. Right, and just like here at Everbank Field, you know, the Jaguars production, they have their own cameras. And they are allowed to use that on the big giant screens here in Everbank Field. But the NFL officials don't have access to that.
So that's like a Kansas City local TV affiliate.
No. No, it's their own cameras at the stadium.
Okay.
So they actually have – most stadiums have their own productions, literally, to be able to put things up on the board, whether it be, you know, cameras that are peeking in on the sideline, cameras that are floating around the field, cameras that – and sometimes, in some cases, Mike, it is – the team's production in conjunction with a local television partner. And so that might have been what Gus was referring to because just like here at Everbank, if Channel 4 or the Jaguars in-house production crew has a shot that they're using up there on the Jumbotron or the big screens and getting their replays up real fast, that's what they're using for the most part. They're not relying on just the network. They have access to the network, but the officials do not have access to that.
And it's interesting that they would even put that up in Kansas City if it was negative towards the team. You know what
I mean? Well, they probably did it, you know, unintentionally, not knowing, you know, what they were
showing. Right, just showing the play.
They're just showing the play.
Right.
You know, because you'll see in certain stadiums that because they are controlled by the home team, that if it's a questionable call, they're doing everything they can to get it up onto the big screens in the stadium so that they can show not only the fans but also show the home coach – you know, hey, look, here's the view.
Right.
You know, throw the red hanky. But to continue on, after that turnover and the fumble by Chris Ivory, the defense had an opportunity at that point to do what happened, I think, in Tennessee, to do what happened in Oakland, show frustration, to get down, to lose energy. And they responded. The next drive after that, the Kansas City Chiefs took over on the minus 20 because that's where the spot comes when the ball's fumbled into the end zone. And the Jaguars held the Kansas City Chiefs to three plays and minus 5 yards and forced them to punt. Then the Jaguars, in like a little over 2 minutes, go down and they score. They throw that touchdown pass to T.J. Yeldon. The defense comes back again and holds the Chiefs to three plays and minus 7 yards. So the two drives after Ivory fumbles, where there was an opportunity at that point to go, woe's me.
Here we go again.
Here we go again. Our offense has not given us any kind of reward. You know, we're not going to win. Let's just forget about it. They held the Kansas City Chiefs to six offensive plays and minus 12 yards. That impressed me. And if it doesn't impress you, I don't know what to tell you. It doesn't impress me that they lost, but it impresses me that they had that kind of a response at that moment in the game.
All right, let's get some calls in here at 641-1010. We'll begin with Ryan in South Georgia. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. What's up?
I got a question. Say the Jags over the next few games, they go 6-10 or 7-9 with Nathaniel Hackett. With that record, everybody would want Gus Bradley out the door. And would Dave Caldwell, if he still has his job, do you think he would let Nathaniel Hackett walk out the door with Gus Bradley or with him building a relationship with Blake Bortles if this offense is significantly improved over the next few games?
That seems like a question for the next head coach. If you, under that scenario, if you had a new head coach coming in, typically you're not going to force a coordinator on a head coach. I'm not saying – I think it's happened a few times. Like, hey, if you want this job, it comes with this guy. But it's very rare that that happens. If you got a guy coming in, you got to give him the opportunity to pick his staff. That's usually part of the deal.
Yeah, that's usually part of it. That's a lot of there's a lot of what if factors.
Sure, there are.
And so it's difficult to have an answer where there's a lot of what ifs. I would probably like to wait and say let's.
But just in the hypothetical of keep a coordinator when the head coach?
I'll answer
moves
it
on.
Like this, in that whatever happens. Okay, whatever happens, and I'm talking general manager, head coach, whatever, consistency for a quarterback is very important. And Blake has already had how many? One, two,
he's on his third,
now on his third.
Yeah.
So would you want to consider consistency? Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, because if you're going to – here's the thing. Even if you decide he's not our guy. Okay. You want to at least allow some type of building block in place until you get to that next spot. Consistency would be good, and keeping that, consistency would be nice.
I think the devil's advocate argument against that would be, after his first year, he lost his offense coordinator, had a breakout season with a brand new guy. You brought him back, which is consistency, and the performance fell off the table, right? And you get the new guy in now, right. And even though he's working, So it doesn't. Yeah. In theory, I think you're right. Jason Campbell was one of those guys. Tony, how many times, going back to his freshman year at Auburn, he had something like 9 different coordinators in 10 years.
Oh, it was crazy. It was crazy. And honestly, I think on this Jaguars staff, because Nate Hackett's been the offensive coordinator for 1 week, the more interesting question about that, if the coaching is going to change, is the defensive side. Where Todd Wash, this is the first year that he's been the defensive coordinator. You are watching what looks like a young group grow up in front of your eyes. I think that's the more interesting dilemma.
Tony, wait a minute. They lost.
I know they lost. but it's not necessarily because of the defense. And my opinion right now, Todd, he looks like a guy that's going to be successful doing that in this league. Whether it's here in Jacksonville going forward or not, I think he's going to be good at it.
Yeah, I like Todd Wash. I think he's a good football coach.
All right, let's get out to Leo in Fruit Cove up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Leo.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the call. Real quick, on the presidential race, I would definitely have to vote Wayne Weaver as my president, and I want Tom Coughlin as my VP. I think Wayne Weaver was always very, just seemed like a very nice man, very honest, very trustworthy type man. He'd be a good president.
All right.
And something about Tom Coughlin strikes me as like a little Dick Cheney. I don't know. Real quick,
Leo, before you go any further, an interesting suggestion that you have there, because you remember going back when Wayne Weaver was the owner of the franchise, he was supporting Republicans, and his wife Dolores is supporting Democrats.
That's bipartisanship at work, right there.
So you would have the ability to go on both sides of the aisle with that.
I'm telling you, and he made that work. I'm telling you.
And if Coughlin reminds you of Dick Cheney, I would advise Logs not to go hunting with Tom Coughlin.
I will go bird hunting.
All right. So what else we got, Leo?
Questions, man. I like how you got. I really enjoy the show, Mike. Because after the games, especially after a loss, I really cut on the radio and I want to hear the reaction. Not to be morbid, but I want to hear what you guys are talking about and see if everybody watched the same game as I did. And it struck me, man. I mean, you guys hit me every week with something I didn't know about the league. Like, this whole thing with the different amount of cameras, it just baffles me, man. And it makes sense what you say about the production and the cost and the cameras and all that. And Monday night gets more cameras and Sunday night it makes sense, man. It just doesn't seem right to me. But the question I have is this. I did see Blake hitting more people in stride, whereas before, and I think that was the kind of that play where A-Rob kind of gave up. I mean, I've said this before, even last year. A-Rob's always laying out for the passes, okay? And I know that's an effort thing. But I always used to say, man, the guy's going to break a rib, man. I mean, I'd love to see him hitting guys more in stride. The question I have is, because I know you guys talk to the coaches a lot, and I don't want to sound insulting when you ask them this, or if you did. I mean, do you practice that in practice? I mean, hitting guys in stride. And one more thing, given Blake Bortles, like, these exotic defensive looks in practice, I mean, does he see these things? Because he's hitting other guys, and I'm just wondering, in practice, do they go through these things and simulate, look, you might see this or you might see that, and here, try to hit A-Rob, so he doesn't have to leave his feet, man. I mean, there's so much good can happen if he can hit these guys in stride, man. Just had those couple of questions for you guys, man. Thanks.
All right,
you a couple great observations there, you know, about the deep ball, Day-Rob. You know, did he give the effort that was needed? Does he, Blake, see those things in practice? I mean, I assure you, he sees all that in practice. You know, that's definitely goes without saying. You know, and on the deep ball questions, Day-Rob. You know, the first deep ball where he is diving,
right?
I thought he shouldn't have dove. If you just keep running, you're faster. Okay. And then the problem with, you know, with that wasn't really a dive. It was a falling forward dive. Whereas running and then diving at the last second.
Or not even diving.
Or not even diving is way more effective and you cover more ground. If it was better, if you were faster diving forward, wouldn't guys in the 40-yard dash time at the combine all the time dive through the line?
They always tell you
in
baseball, don't dive to first base, right? Unless you're trying to avoid a tag when the guy comes off the bag, because when you run through the bag, you're always going to get there faster.
Second base is different because you're trying to get under
the tag. Right, you can't overrun it.
You can't overrun it, and you got to get under the tag.
Yeah.
You know, so the first one, I thought A-Rob made a mistake. I thought that was a little slightly overthrown, but A-Rob should have stayed on his feet and kept running. Well, I'm sure that conversation happened on the sideline because, you know, the one that was later on in the game where Blake clearly overthrows it, and a lot of people thought that maybe he should have dove for that ball. From the camera angle on television, it looks like that he should have dove. And on the all-22 shot on film, it looks like he should have dove. When you look at the end zone shot, you could see that it was inside and under and overthrown. So there was no chance for him to dive to try to make that play. He made the right call and that continuing to run to be fast to make that play. But the most important thing with those two plays, Blake has to hit those plays. I mean, those are home run plays. And I'm not saying you got to hit both of them, but give me one of the two. Just give me one of the two on a deep ball. And it could have changed the entire complexion of the game.
But the question, do they coach him to hit him in stride? Of course they do. I mean, that's
absolutely.
It's not like they're sitting there, Blake overthrows it by a foot, and they say, now this time throw it a foot short. You know, he knows, mm-hmm. You know, you got to hit the guy in stride. You don't want the guy to have to lay out for except under, you know, certain situations if the guy maybe is right on his back. But most of the time you're trying to drop it right in the bucket on a guy like that if he's got any kind of daylight. So he knows that. I will say this. I do think we sit here. It's pretty amazing how accurate some guys are throwing the ball 40, 50 yards downfield. And it's right there with a guy moving, with a defender hanging on, maybe grabbing his arm. And that ball, you know, to time everything up, to have that ball fall right at that spot it's an underappreciated thing because we see it happen successfully so often. But maybe we just focus in on the ones that are successful because there are plenty of overthrows, plenty of underthrows in the National Football League, you know what I mean? But you're right. You got to hit those plays regardless of how difficult it is. It's difficult because it's quarterback in the NFL. It's a difficult thing to do.
And I was excited because they were there. Okay.
Right, the fact that he was to play, the opportunity was there with A-Rob open.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the plays were called, they were executed, not executed, because executed means they worked, but the opportunity was there because the offensive coordinator called it. But then if you factor in the other deep balls that I talked about that weren't thrown, the Release Ben one, the Allen Hurns one, I like the fact that there were deep opportunities there for the taking. Now you just have to make the plays, and then you can change the outcome of a game.
All right, let's take a time out here. We'll come back to this Dayton football, the Honda driver on the NFL. More with Jeff Logman, including your calls at 641-1010. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is Jaguars Date in football history.
All right, this Dayton football history presented this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. November 8th, we go back to 1970. My cousin Tom got the job done. Tom Dempsey of the New Orleans Saints broke a 17-year-old record by booting a 63-yard field goal on that date. Baltimore's Burt Reischauer previously held the record. How long was the record before the 63-yarder?
55.
56. That's very good. Can you imagine that? Nobody had kicked more than a 56-yarder prior to 1970 in National Football League history. And then it jumped up. It was like Bob Beamon breaking the long jump record in 68. The longest field goal on record is 64 yards. Who holds the record for the longest field goal?
It just happened.
The last few years. last few years.
I thought there was one that was this year.
There were several of them that have kicked 63. The 64-yarder was done by Matt Prater in 2013. He kicked a 58-yarder to send it to overtime this week.
Yes,
that
he
had
did.
Juice to spare, let's just say. The 63 done by Dempsey, matched by Jason Elam, Sebastian Janikowski, and David Akers. Moving on to birthdays for this date, go back to 1964. Chuck Cecil, one of the hardest-hitting, many would say dirtiest players that the National Football League had seen in a while.
He had a haircut like you, Mike.
52. Yeah, he did have a. He is a handsome man, is what he was. The Missile was born in this date in 1970. Cadre Ismail, maybe the lesser-known of the Ismail brothers, the Rocket and the Missile, and he turns 46 today. And Sam Bradford, still counting all that money, man. He is just rolling in. He didn't care they're on three-game losing streak. I wouldn't either, Sam, if I had all that money out of my rookie deal. 29 years old today for Sam, the number one overall pick in the 2010 NFL draft. This date in football presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, conveniently located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, if you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. In the meantime, visit jamesjmccall.com. Get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That was this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
You can now out Drew Brees as the latest player to weigh in on why the ratings for the NFL games are down. Brees said yesterday that he believes it's about the mistrust that the players have had in Roger Goodell spilling over into the fan base regarding the way that suspensions and investigations are handled, saying, quote, "Listen, we as players want the best for this league. This league has so many great things to offer, and for a long time the fans were really enjoying it. Now it seems like it's taken a hit. And it really feels like it's been the culmination of the last few years and the way the business of football is being run in the front office. That's the concerning part about this for us." The Minnesota Vikings are going to have at least two kickers in for a workout today as they consider their options beyond Blair Walsh after he missed two more kicks, won an extra point, and a 46-yard field goal in the fourth quarter of their overtime loss to the Detroit Lions that was blocked on Sunday. Walsh missed a 27-yard field goal in their wild card loss to Seattle in January. He is 12 of 16 on his field goal attempts this season, but he has missed 3 of 16 extra points already this year for the Minnesota Vikings. A couple of notes coming out of Los Angeles. Head coach Jeff Fisher confirmed yesterday that Case Keenum will be the team starter this week. A report from Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network indicates that Keenum will remain the team starter until the Rams are officially eliminated from playoff contention, and then Jared Goff will finally get the nod. Fisher also said yesterday they need to get the ball to Todd Gurley more. He had just 12 touches this weekend against Carolina in a 13-10 game. And more draft talk, sort of. If you're sitting on your couch tonight, you get a little tired of watching the precinct slowly trickle in. There is a football game on tonight. I'm not going to highly recommend Western Michigan and Kent State at 7:30 on ESPN2. But if you are into the NFL draft, you can flip over and watch Western Michigan wide receiver Corey Davis, who is getting some buzz as a potential first-round pick this year. Davis has already gone over the 1,000-yard mark this season for the third year in a row, 1,400 yards in back-to-back years. He's also caught 14 touchdown passes through 9 games this year.
That's pretty productive.
Western Michigan?
Western Michigan.
Home of Joel Schmange.
I did not know that,
yeah.
But I knew who you were going with. Once you went
it's the Maction tonight. Tuesday night Maction.
You could, that's clever. That's clever. I don't mind the Tuesday games if you're bored and you have nothing else to do. I don't know. What do I usually watch on Tuesday? I know what I'll be watching tonight, but.
There's something on your DVR.
No, I don't have a DVR.
Tuesday.
Or the.
On demand, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Possibly.
How do you guys think it's Tosh.0?
Is it? No, yeah. I don't see it. What's that, Tyler? That.
I was going to ask you guys, how do you feel about the Big Ten now playing some games on Fridays?
It doesn't bother me. I understand why people get upset about it.
They
feel like
thing,
it's infringing on the high school landscape and all that. But me personally, I don't want to make any enemies, but high school football just doesn't do it for me. You know, it's just like that's not my cup of tea, so I don't care. I'm not going out to high school football games on Friday night anyway, so if they want to throw the occasional game on Friday, I'm okay with that, you know.
It's not going to change my plans. If I was planning on going to a high school game, I'm going to go to the high school game. Like, just because there's a Big Ten game on that night, I don't care.
No, you. But maybe.
Maybe in the Midwest.
Right, if you're in Ohio and Ohio State's playing, and maybe it wouldn't be Ohio State playing on a Friday night, but you get the idea, right?
Yeah.
You're up in Minnesota and the Golden Gophers are on Friday
night. Not changing my plans to go watch Iowa.
Maybe your allegiance will be split as far as that goes. All right, 641-1010 today, the social media question today, trying to have a little fun. on this November 8th, on this otherwise uneventful day in American history, asking you if you had a chance to vote for a Jaguar, past or present, current or former, however you want to look at it, for president of the United States. And a lot of people are suggesting the full ticket. They're giving the VP. You've been nominated for Secretary of the Interior, which would be like national parks and all that good stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Hunting, yeah, I'd like that.
The text line says Jeff for Prez, Ted Nugent for VP.
Oh.
That'd be interesting.
I could actually see some of this. They may be a little too similar. Sometimes you try to broaden the map a little bit. I don't know. I'm not speaking politically. I'm just talking about he's a big outdoorsman hunter type.
Yeah. Yeah, he actually is. When he gets rolling, it's when he gets on some of those political talk shows, he holds his own.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive for a rock and roller.
All right, let's go to Sean in Georgia, checking in next this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Sean.
Hey, good morning. Thanks, guys. So, first off, I think Leo hit it right on the dot with Beaver and, as far
Coughlin.
As his presidential candidates. But, yeah,
sure.
But what I want to say is I read an article on NFL.com yesterday where they mentioned that no coveted head coach would be willing to hit their wagon mortals. And so I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. And in particular, obviously, I want to hear what you guys think about Coughlin. And I know I might be going down a path that'll never happen, but of course, I think a lot of us would love to see him come back. But what do you think about that as far as what type of caliber of NFL head coach would be willing to stick with Bortles?
Well, I'm first of all, we're not going to get into specifics because there's no job opening, right? In terms of like, are we going to put Coughlin or any other candidate in that conversation, because there's not a conversation yet to be had on that. And
no, but I'll make a general answer to
sure.
that. You know, with any job opening that has a quarterback that's there with a job opening, they're not going to want to hitch their wagon to that quarterback. They're gonna come in there
unless
with
they believe in him.
They're gonna even if they believe in him, they don't even say that when they come in. They come in and basically say it's an open mind, it's an open competition, we'll figure it out.
Right.
You know, so that's
but,
the
but
right
would
attitude.
That, and then whether that's the answer they would give, would that, though, do you think that'd be an impediment? If a quarterback, you know, if Blake doesn't improve, if Blake kind of has his up and down kind of performances the rest of the way, it certainly could make the job less attractive. It depends, though. I mean, we just don't know. There's all kinds of circumstances. Jeff, you could have a new GM, in which case, you know, GM coach combo could come in and they're going to be allowed to select whoever they want, you know, for the football team. I don't know. I guess it could be an issue if Gus were to be fired and Dave Caldwell were to retain the job and he made it a kind of a mandate that if I'm going to hire you as the head coach, you've got to stick with Bortles or at least for another year or whatever the case. I mean, that's too hypothetical for me to go down the road with, so
I'm with you on that.
All right. Thank you for the call, though. Look, I understand why people are thinking about it. We got to take a time out here. 641-1010. We'll get you back on the other side. Also, check in on the text line driven by Duval Ford and hear a little bit more from Gus Bradley on his Monday press conference, kind of putting a postmortem on their loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. With Fat Tony, with Jeff Lagerman, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today, live at EverBank on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
It's Tuesday's Talk with 88. Alan Hearns joins Dan and Jeff on the Drill Tuesday morning. Brought to you by Body Armor Natural Sports Drink and the construction law and litigation attorneys. Regan, Whalen, Zabuni, and Atwood. Jeff Lagerman lays down the law. Jeff Lagerman Tuesday on Jaguars Today is brought to you by Crockett Law PL Real Estate Law. Now more with Jeff Lagerman.
All right, we continue on Jaguars Today live at EverBank, 641-1010. The phone number, it's also the text line driven by Duval Ford. Social media question of the day, just asking you which Jaguar would you like to top the presidential ticket, past or present? Who would you vote for? And we'd appreciate your feedback on that or your questions for Jeff Lagerman as submitted on the text line. We've hit a few of those on Twitter and on Facebook as well. Let's get back to the phone lines here, though, and we'll welcome David on the south side next up on 1010XL. Good morning, David.
Yeah, since he was rumored to was going to run for mayor at one time, but he didn't live in Duval County, I'll nominate Tony Boselli.
All right. There you go.
Lagerman, two things. First of all, do you think that Bortles, what I see in Bortles is I see someone who's a little gun-shy, someone who's who sees pressure when it's really not there, and that's because maybe that I think the stat was he was sacked the last 2 years more than any other quarterback in the league. And you know, with a young guy like that, I'm not questioning he's a tough guy, but still, you continue to get sacked. I start thinking he starts seeing things as far as, you know, people coming that aren't rare. I think he's a little gun shy right now. I think that's his biggest problem. And second of all, I'll leave this off the air, is Gus Bradley. I'm not saying Gus Bradley isn't a good coach, but I think he's the wrong coach for this team. I think Gus Bradley is what they call a player's coach, which basically means he's more friendly with the players. And when you have a young team like the Jaguars were, you really need a kind of a Tom Coughlin kind of hard-nosed guy, whereas if you had a veteran team that knows what to do and knows the ins and outs, that maybe a guy like Gus Bradley, who's more of a player's coach, would be a little more successful. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thank you, David. Sounds a lot like Whitey. Maybe David – is Whitey. I don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, to answer the first part, he thinks that maybe Blake is a little gun-shy. I don't see gun-shy. What I do see, kind of what we talked about earlier, in that when you're indecisive and you're not confident of where you're going to be going with the ball, your feet are never looking set. And they look like Blaine Gabbert instead of confident Tom Brady, set, looking good, you know, with all the confidence in the world. But I don't want people to confuse gun shy with indecisiveness, because that's easy to confuse at times. And in the game against Kansas City, there were moments that Dee Ford flashed, and Blake, rightfully so, was kind of, I don't want to say skittish, but was moving at times when he probably didn't need to. But I think for good reason, because, you know, Dee Ford was a serious threat, tough matchup, and Dee Ford was able to get home a few times. So the comment about Gus versus Tom, you know, and I think we went to this area last week, you know, there's all kinds of perceived types of coaches that have had success and perceived types of coaches that have not. You know, some of the best coaches in the league, Pete Carroll, one of them last night, is viewed as a player's coach. Bill Belichick, viewed as a hard-nosed type, you know, kind of along the same lines of Tom Coughlin. You know, so there is not one way that is needed or required to have success. Sometimes one leader. It doesn't matter what they are perceived as long as they are successful. Kind of crazy.
Right.
Because, you know,
if it works,
Del Rio,
it's good.
What kind of a coach was Del Rio? The perception.
Player's coach.
Wasn't.
Not in the beginning?
In the beginning he was, and then
he tried, right. See, and that to me was the problem, because it's tough to go soft to hard. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's tough to come in as the guy who's a backslapper and then become the disciplinarian. I think it's a lot easier to
Andy
go the
Reid
other direction.
What's the perception on Andy Reid?
Probably disciplinarian.
He's not. Player's coach. You know, so, I mean, that's kind of what I'm talking about, is that, you know, what perception and what reality is are sometimes two different things with coaches in the National Football League. Andy Reid has a ton of respect and very gracious to his players. How he handled the Travis Kelce thing, I think, should give an indication to some what kind of a coach he is. He didn't berate him. He didn't grab his face mask. He didn't snatch him up. He talked to him briefly and told him, you know, get off the field, you know. So other coaches around the league, highly successful coaches that are currently in the National Football League, who are they?
Bill Belichick.
Okay, besides him.
Okay.
Mike Tomlin.
Mike Tomlin, sure. Players coach
Players
all the
guy,
way.
Yeah.
Players coach?
Feels
huge.
Like it.
But he gives the perception of this real hard, tough guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's some of that. I can see that. I think he's just a fiery guy. I think players love Mike Tomlin.
They
from
do.
Everything I've heard, that he is a big-time
They do, but he,
coach.
Mike Tomlin, from everything that I hear, Mike Tomlin's kind of in the middle. He can be a player's coach.
There's some elements of that.
And then he can be
I think Tomlin's outstanding.
Pretty
I really do.
I think he's a great coach.
Yeah, so different ways to do it. Sure. If you have success. You know, the thing, though, you talk about the thing with Travis Kelce, because a lot was made, you know, when the Jags, whether it was Malik Jackson or Jalen Ramsey, Odrick, different points this year, guys losing their minds, and people have said, see, this is the problem. Gus is too soft. He lets them walk all over him. Gus should be up in their face. He should be, you know, handling the business right there at the side. And I hear you use an example of a very successful coach in Andy Reid who approached it a completely different way. And, you know, so what's right, what's wrong?
Well, I thought Andy Reid handled it very similar to what Gus did.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Right. And yet, you know, maybe because they won, that's, you know, or Andy Reid's had a lot more success. People or, you know, just Jacksonville fans aren't judging Andy Reid's every move.
6-2 makes you right.
Yeah.
2-6 makes you wrong. Right. I mean, that's the simple nature of it. It's why Pete Carroll can be right being a player's guy and Bill Belichick can be right being a player's guy or, you know, the hard-nosed guy. I mean, that's if you win, you're right. That's the way it works.
All right. I wanted to play this cut from Gus yesterday, and it's a little bit lengthy, but listen in and hear what he had to say. Gus was asked about being in this position before with this football team with a poor record and what lessons can be learned from the adversity that they've gone through in the past.
I think that, you know, if you go back and reflect 2 weeks ago, that Thursday night game, that was a tough one. That was tough. That was really hard on us. It was hard on our players. And I was really excited to see how we'd come back. We're going into Kansas City, unbelievable environment, you know, a very, very good team, and to see how our team would react, not only each unit, but how would they work together as a team. And I thought there was multiple times I was very pleased looking on the sideline, their demeanor when we got behind or wherever the case was, the team did not flinch. After Chris Ivory fumbled, and the defense had to come back, and they came out, and it wasn't, I mean, they went out there, and I think they played with even more energy. So all those things are great signs, all of them. I mean, we're not sitting here talking about a team. This is two games in a row now. I mean, and I give them all sorts of credit for that. Their character that we talk about, you challenge them, and it showed up. We get the run game going, the play pass a little better. We didn't execute nearly as well as we'd like, but we saw some good things. But we're not after good, we're after great, and we need better. And I think these guys all need to look in the mirror and say, what can I do, rather than looking at each unit. And so I think if we get a team that takes personal responsibility and says, you know what, it's, you know, these little things are showing up, and we talk about little things, but we actually got to do them consistently, then I do. I think there's players in that room that can play at a high, consistent level where we can do some really good things. And we got to learn to do that. And so, to me, do you have any doubt that this team can do that? I have no doubt. So we got a lot of work to do, though. We got a lot of work to do. But they feel the same way.
You know, after the game, when you talk with Gus, kind of going along the theme of what he just said, we don't want to be good, we want to be great, right? He said to you, I'm paraphrasing here, something to the effect of, we're not looking for a bunch of positives, we're looking to win, right? And I thought the Tennessee game had to be a disappointing one, one of the most disappointing games for Gus Bradley, just the way the team didn't respond and all that. This one, he sounded as angry as I've ever heard him, at least publicly, in his tenure here in Jacksonville, you know, when he said it's a hard-ass lesson to learn. You don't hear Gus talk like that. Particularly, you know, about the performance of his team, just in light of that, he's usually a lot more measured. You know, do you sense the, you know, the frustration? Is he trying to use some different emotional cues to get these guys going, or is he just at his wit's end a little bit and is frustrated the fact that they feel like they outplayed Kansas City and yet the turnovers are the thing that caused them?
The one thing I will say about Gus is that I've always appreciated is he doesn't change. I mean, what you see is what you get. And after the Tennessee game, I mean, you could just tell that highly disappointed in himself, disappointed in his team. I don't want to say embarrassed, but, you know, kind of pushing towards that. And then this past game, downright angry, you know, I mean, but not angry at anybody in particular, just angry, and had an edge about him, and that's okay. But the one thing I appreciate most about Gus, and I will say this about Dave Caldwell too, you know, look, when it's 2-6 and it's year four, and you are basically 14-42, you know, record wise. They haven't changed. You know, they haven't changed. You know, they're the same people they were going back to year one and year two, and how they deal with us, Mike, whether they deal with you or they deal with me or they deal with They're consistent, you know. And I, in this business, it's hard to find consistency and consistent people. And I think that was always a trait of Tom Coughlin that I always respected. Now it's a different kind of consistency. But Tom Coughlin was always consistent. And he never changed. He never wavered in his beliefs or how he acted on certain days. And I respected that. And I respect that also in Gus Bradley, and I respect that in Dave Caldwell.
One thing that I think, you know, obviously the turnovers upset Gus. They upset anybody. It should upset the players as well. You know, it's kind of like going back to the caller who said, hey, do they teach Bortles to hit these guys in stride? Well, of course, you know, that's the goal. They teach them. And Gus talked yesterday.
A little tongue-in-cheek there, I think, from people.
Right. On terms of on stressing ball security, this is Gus cut number five, Tyler, from yesterday. Here's what he had to say about the turnovers.
Okay, this is also in reference to Brian Walters, by the way.
He's one of our best in practice with ball security. He saw the line, felt like there was a chance to get it, felt like the risk was greater than the reward, and, you know, it didn't work to our benefit. So you always talk about down the goal line. You see it with quarterbacks jumping over the pile, guys going to the pylon, reaching the ball up. And, you know, to a coach's mindset, the risk doesn't outweigh the reward. And so you don't teach that. But players sometimes fall into that. I mean, it's so alluring. It's right there for them.
He's talking more specifically about Ivory, right, on that one. It's all good. I know he said – I was reading the transcript of his press conference yesterday, this morning, and he basically said, look, I don't know what – you know, we emphasize it every single day, ball security, every single
day. About the ball. How many times have we
– It's always about the ball.
It's about the ball.
From the very first practice – this is true across football. Forget the National Football League, just football. Go to the first offseason practice. What are they doing? Defense. Plays over for 5 seconds, they're still trying to strip the ball. Offensive guys wrapping it up with two arms. They know it's like a point of pride that those guys are going to come in even after the whistle and try to pop it out because the stress is there. Create turnovers, don't allow turnovers. And yet, I mean, it's not like Brian Walters and Chris Ivory and T.J. Yeldon, it's not like they don't know you shouldn't fumble the ball. The thing with Brian Walters, what do you do now? Gus was asked about this with the punt returner situation. You just go back to Rashad Greene now or what?
The big question is he healthy?
Yeah.
You know, I know he's been dealing with an Achilles, I believe it was, at one point. I don't know if it still is. You know, and Brian Walters is now in the concussion protocol as well as Allen Hurns. If it were me, Marquise Lee, find him ways to get the ball, right? I mean, look at what he's doing on kick return.
Doing a good job.
You know, he's moved up the ranks to where he's now actually fifth in the National Football League in kick return average. He's a dynamic athlete. And if it's another way to get him a touch, by all means, put him back there.
Here's Gus weighing in on that very subject on Marquise Lee being used as a kick returner and just overall how he's playing.
It's pretty impressive. You know, I think that you feel like he's got a chance to break one, you know, with him back there. And I think that, you know, he's got good poise and patience, and he seems to be hitting it right. I think Marquise Lee has been very impressive to us as a staff, his overall play. Not only as a wide receiver, but as a kick returner. And I think I mentioned before, I think he's in a good world. And everything seems to be coming together, and everything he touches, he does pretty good, other than that punt return a couple weeks ago.
Exactly, and that's kind of what I'm getting, right? I mean, you had Rashad Green cough it up, and then he had the bad decision to catch the ball at the one, which is almost worse because that's a decision. I mean, guys make physical errors. Guys are trying to catch a ball on the run. You don't like it, but it happens. And then, you know, Lee had that one, and then Walters, you think, all right, well, he doesn't have as much dynamic breakaway speed as Marquise Lee or Rashad Greene may have, but he's going to hang on to the football.
He's been dependable.
He caught it, and that's the thing, too. He didn't muff it. He caught it. He had his arms wrapped on it, and he still had it popped away from him.
Look, I don't know if Green's still dealing with that Achilles injury or not. I know he wasn't even mentioned on an injury report last week, so he was never even limited in practice last week and was scratched from the game.
That's right, 2 weeks in a row as far as that goes. I think you just got to – I mean, that's kind of where you're at. It's going to be one of the two, right? And Marquise Lee, I don't know how they feel about how many reps he's getting on offense versus adding more to him in the return game, but one of those two needs to be back there. I'd probably go to Rashad Greene, okay, honestly. And I'd let Marquise continue to do his role on kickoffs because he has such a big role right now, and it may even grow with Allen Hurns through the concussion protocol. I'd probably go to Rashad because we've seen it from Rashad now.
Sure.
We've seen the dynamic breakaway potential from him. So I would go and give
you
him a
shot. You probably
don't.
I mean, if he's healthy. Let's assume
right.
Rashad Greene is healthy.
Right. That's an assumption.
He's going to be active. Because
he has to be.
Allen
sure.
Hurns, you know, Brian Walters.
Right.
Let's say they're not available. I mean, you got to have.
Matt,
him
you
up.
Lay one on the ground, and that's the only chance you get. I'm not going to give you another chance to do that. So at that point, I would say, hey, Marquise, you know, to buckle up because mm-hmm. you're going to have a few more touches here. But that's probably what I would do right now. So
yeah. No, I'm with you. And boy, you know, it's tempting to take Marquise Lee and just give him a few more reps as a
yeah.
punt returner.
No, it is. It is. I think wow. he's going to be heavily involved in that offensive package this week against Houston.
He has been very impressive this year.
All right.
Didn't we have a caller, like consecutive weeks, call not long back? I was asking that, you know, Marquise Lee's the problem.
Oh,
yeah, he was
yeah.
messing up the offense.
Yeah, that was one guy in particular. We had several last year that said they should cut him. And, you know, look, not everybody, by the way, becomes a superstar the first day in the National Football League. Right?
No, and there's a lot of, you know, look, there's a lot of different receivers that have come in the league. And it's not just receivers.
Go look at Reggie Wayne's totals.
Same
his first
track.
5 years of his career and how slow he built up to being the guy he eventually became, which was a Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but it's not
receiver.
Just wide receivers. I mean, sometimes it takes – Jerry Hughes was, you know, first-round pick in Indianapolis
right.
Colts. I remember watching Jerry Hughes on film going, this guy stinks.
It's not
He's
always,
bad.
But oftentimes it's receivers. And I think in this era where A.J. Green and Julio Jones came in and lit it up right away, and then Odell Beckham, you had that entire
Megatron,
class of Kelvin Benjamin and Landry and all these guys, it broke kind of the mold of receivers. It used to be something in fantasy called the third-year or the fourth-year receiver theory, that's how long it took for receivers to break out. So you drafted those guys, those young guys, in their third or fourth year, after a lot of other people forgot about them for underperformance because it was such a trend. That's just the way it was in the NFL. So it's, you know, despite some obvious examples to the contrary that we pointed out, it's not always the easiest position to acclimate yourself to. We got to take a timeout. We'll come back with the look at the fan feedback spotlight today. Who are you voting for from the Jaguar all-timer list if you had a chance to vote for one of them, the highest office in the land? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Logman here with you on Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Folks, Harry's is back, and they're back in a big way just in time for the holiday season. Harry's.com is where you can get all your shaving needs taken care of, and you're going to get the highest quality products that you can get anywhere. I use them myself, and I'm telling you, they're as good or better than any razor I've ever tried, and the great thing is they're a lot less expensive. How does Harry's do it? Well, heck, they own the company. They cut out the middleman, and they're always giving you the highest quality products. They keep prices exactly the same. When big razor companies make a small change, they come out with the newest version, they're going to raise their price. Not so at Harry's. In fact, they're so confident in the quality of their blades, they're going to send you their popular free trial set, which comes with a razor. You get a 5-blade cartridge and shaving gel, and you can get this free trial set when you subscribe by just paying $3 for shipping. Plus, I've got a special offer for our 1010XL listeners. Enter code Dempsey at checkout. You get a post-shave balm included free with your order. Go to harrys.com right now. Enter code Dempsey at checkout. Claim your free trial set from Harry's. And your post-shave bomb as well. That's Harry's.com. Use promo code Dempsey.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jaguars might have lost to the Chiefs 19-14, but it was a better week when it came to penalties. The Jags only had 5 for 46 yards. Here's head coach Gus Bradley.
I'd like to say because they're listening. You know, then it means they weren't listening before, so... you know what? I think for some of them, it is a conscious. I think that, you know, sometimes penalties, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but some foolish penalties are really selfish. And you get caught in your emotions, you let your emotions take over, and you forget about what's best for the team. And we had those situations come up.
This has been Jaguars Daily brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios at Everbank Field. From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Albert Breer on Twitter gave an update on Eric Wood last night. If you watch Monday Night Football, the Bills All-Pro Center, or Pro Bowl Center, I don't know if he's been an All-Pro, but suffered an injury, turned out to be a broken fibula with some ligament damage. He's going to have surgery tomorrow, and the full extent is not known. Certainly his season looks to be over.
I wonder if it was the same leg that he hurt here.
I don't know. I don't know if it was or not. I don't remember which leg they're talking about.
Pretty significant injury here on this field.
Pretty sure that was the fourth quarter that happened last night. And I was kind of drifting in and out, paying attention at that point, just making sure Russell Wilson enough with the points.
All right, fantasy.
I needed some, but not that much. Okay, and he did me fine.
He was looking for this sweet spot.
How can you be looking for a player not to give you too many points?
Because I'm playing against him in another league.
He needed 20, but he didn't need 25.
I needed 25, or I gladly took 25, but I didn't need 35. And that first half that he had looked like he was on track to get there. All right, let's get Chris on the north side before we hit up the fan feedback spotlight today. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How y'all doing this morning?
Doing great, Chris. What's up?
Man, you know, I kind of get this team gives me the feeling that if it plays at a high level, all three phases, then I feel like, man, I don't see no reason why this team can't at least go 7-1 for the second half of the season. And I take my comments off.
Least,
what are the
percentages? All right, at least 7-1. So he leaves some room for upside there. Look,
at least 7-1.
All right, at least. Thank you, Chris. Look, I'll say this. If they play at a high level on offense, defense, special teams, I agree. They could win a lot of games. The question is, based on the performance they've given you up until this point in the season, how likely is it that they fire on all cylinders, on all phases? Now, the defense this week was good enough to win a ton of games, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't the case the week before. Offense has been shaky. To get all these three components.
Consistently shaky.
Consistently shaky, right? So to get all three of these components playing at a high level in a given week, never mind seven or eight given weeks, is, I think, a tough task. But I do believe they're a talented team. I don't question that.
I agree. I think they are a talented team. They are a young, talented team, particularly on defense. Offense, they're still young, but we expected more. Look, they could have great success in the second half of the season. And if you do, there's a lot of division games left in that schedule to give you an opportunity.
Including
now.
This week.
That's right. Houston, and then you go to Detroit, to Buffalo. Detroit's not a cakewalk now. Detroit, their
playing
record.
Good ball. They're 5-4.
Well, they're 4-1 in the last five games.
Right.
I mean, they've been playing really good
football.
And
one of that may have been the Tennessee loss where they had that game dominated, and then they let Tennessee come back.
And
their
quarterback is playing really well right now.
Yeah. Oh, he played. It was amazing to watch them go down
throwing
the field.
Darts.
Less than a minute. Yeah, he's got a howitzer.
I watched the Texans-Detroit film yesterday because, that was Texans had a bye. So that was the most recent game that the Texans had. It was 2 weeks ago. And I'm sitting there watching Matt Stafford going, wow, that's not the Matt Stafford that I used to watch. I'm going, man, he is pinpoint, decision-making, quick, accurate. Playing really high level.
Just one thing, because you mentioned the youth, and I'm not saying you said this, but just to be clear, youth on offense to me is not an excuse. They were younger last year, and they've taking a step back. So to me, yes, they're young. That's more of an observation than anything.
Right.
In other words, they're young and talented, and there's a lot of room for growth. But no one's saying, oh, they're young, give them time.
That's not an excuse.
Right, just making that clear for everybody who's listening in. Tony, in terms of the fan feedback spotlight, let's go around the table first. Present company excluded. You can't vote for Logs, okay? Who would you vote for the top of the ticket for President of the United States from the Jaguar family, players, coaches, you name it. Who tops your ticket?
For me?
Yes.
Given the negativity that we've had in this particular election, I think the country needs a little taste of Donovan Darius.
Logs, you got another
just
candidate?
Just let him stump, man. Just let that guy go talk. I feel better just listening to him.
Of all the players that I played with, one of the ones that really stands out in my mind, who I thought was a very good man, was Mickey Washington. From the early days.
You raved about him when he – did he come in alumni
weekend
last year.
Year,
right?
Yeah.
And you hadn't seen him in a while. I remember you –
Mickey Washington, I think, would be good, and I would probably pair Rich Griffith as his vice president, former tight end. He would give us some of the religious vote, and would really balance the ticket.
I think Darius at the top of the ticket is great. He could be either way. I think the guy you put him with is Meester, because Meester's solid, steady, as a few people have suggested today. Always shows up.
Iowa.
You know,
Iowa.
Swing state. Right?
Corn cover.
But Donovan is an inspirational guy. You know, I could see him giving a stump speech and getting people to their feet, that kind of thing. You know, he'd be strong on defense, you would think, anyway. So, anyway, we're having a little fun with that today. Give us some example of what we got on the feedback, Tone.
Here's what we got from Andy. Jared Odrick, everything I read about him makes him sound like a really smart guy. From Positive Jags Fan, he said that Jared Odrick, of course. Logs, why were the running backs so good on Sunday and not before? He still wanted to get his question in there. From Jeff, Puzz, number 51 for the White House, smart player, does what's best for the team. From Jarrell, I vote for Donovan Darius. He's a man of the people. Also, Puzz is head of security. From Alvaro, Logs gets my vote. David Garrard for vice president. And from Chris, we got Sergio Brown. Just imagine all of America giving two claps and a Ric Flair. From Paul, Jimmy Smith for president. Keenan McCardell for VP.
Oh, boy.
From Black Dog, we got Burnell for Prez. Logman for director of fish and game and Department of Interior. And from Brian, Fred Taylor with Darius as the VP.
Some votes for Curtis, the original Jackson DeVille, getting some love on both Twitter and Facebook.
That's
Sean Tron, Donovan Darius, Tom Coughlin, Mark Burnell, but Logs in charge of Homeland Security on that one. Scobie, so he can play golf more than the current president. Let's see, David Garrard, hands down. A couple of votes for Logs there, another Coughlin, a Freddie T, a Pazluzny, a Donovan Darius, a Rasheen Mathis, Gus, because that if he does become president, then we can make the Jaguars great again. So.
Yeah, I saw one with the Jags, and the America really needs to sweep the corners. Like I've seen that.
Quick thought, Logs, on this. We really have a minute here. But I got a few texts today, and here's a question as well about how they're using Dante Fowler Jr. and asking, should they stand him up more? One guy said, I watch all his college games. It's from the 386, probably a Gator fan. Said, it seemed like they may have used him a little bit more that way. Are you happy with how they're trying to utilize Fowler right now?
Yes, I think it's a perfect position for him. You know, he does stand up a bunch. He puts his hand down a bunch. He mixes it up. Sometimes he drops into coverage. I think they're utilizing his skill set very well. I mean, he's a perfect fit for a Leo outside linebacker type, and essentially that's what the Leo is. And I thought he had a very nice game, half sack, had four tackles, and then two of the tackles that he had were absolutely bone-jarring hits.
Yeah, and he let you know about it afterwards.
He certainly did.
He talks after every tackle, man.
Really does.
And I like the way that, look, he got up in the face, but he never carried it too far. And so progress for Dante Fowler. And the hit that he had on Kelsey, did you hear us talking about on the radio that when Kelsey came off the sideline, he had to give his helmet to the equipment guy because the entire face mask was bent. I mean, that was
on the hit.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. By the way, Kelsey was so interfered with on that play. And
absolutely.
If we were the Kansas City Chiefs fan base, that's all we would have been talking about. Of course, they won, so it gets lost in that. But
yeah, Prince Mukumar turned
him. He turned him like almost 90 degrees.
There was a couple plays, and that was one of the games that I will say that, and I'm trying to, Gene Steratore was the head referee in that ball game. And just remember that if we ever see that crew again, it's a let him play crew. Because there was a lot of plays that I thought that were just no calls, and they just said, look, we're going to let him play. Now, Jonathan Cyprian had one on the tight end, I think we mentioned on the radio, to where he kind of had a grasp of cloth. Allen Robinson got accosted a couple times in that game trying to get up the field. Which is no surprise. It's Allen Robinson. He seems to be getting a lot of those this year, but they weren't even reaching into their pockets for that.
All right. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks to everybody who checked us out and participated in the program here on any of the various ways, social media, the text line, you name it. Malik Jackson going to join the Midday Chalk here at the top of the hour, so stick around for that. Telvin Smith later on this afternoon, I believe around 4:40 this afternoon, if I'm not mistaken.
4:30.
With Frangie and the crew, 4:30. Thank you, Tyler. And so for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Jeff Loggeman and Fat Tony, I'd vote for any of those fellows. I'm not going to tell you what I'd vote for them for, but nevertheless, vote, people. If you haven't already, hopefully you did, because it beats the lines on election day. I don't know why anybody would not vote early, but as long as you vote, I don't care if you vote early, vote late. I don't even particularly care who you vote for. Just vote. Exercise your right, and then you'll feel better when you gripe for the next 4 years that at least you did your part. All right, that's going to do it for us. I'm Mike Dempsey signing off for Jaguars Today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jacksonville, great place. How's your football team going to be? Good, good. I hear good things.
You guys have a good day. Peace.